Obviously, the first goal, the primary mandate of the Institute is to do research, and you'll have the opportunity of meeting researchers as we stay here and having hopefully some informal conversations, and of course, we'll be meeting them through the keynote sessions and the mentoring sessions and so forth. So you can get a flavor of the sorts of things that we're doing here and why we're doing it. But another really essential aspect of the Institute, as Damian mentioned, is outreach. And we're doing this for a wide variety of reasons, but perhaps first and foremost, we're doing it because we believe in it. We're doing it because we're obviously committed to instilling a sense of the importance of theoretical physics and the importance of science in the world at large. And we're a new institute, as you probably know. We haven't been around for all that long, and certainly we're extremely new by academic standards. So we thought we'd do things a little bit differently, and we thought we'd focus our outreach efforts on trying to, as I said, stimulate the wider world as to why people do physics and what makes it interesting and so forth. So we have a wide variety of programs. You guys are on the leading edge of an elite program. We don't have to tell you why physics is important, and we don't have to tell you all the wonderful things about it, because you were chosen specifically for this program because of your aptitude, because of your experience, because of the promise that you represent for future generations. So this is our way of trying to develop a relationship with you and your peer group, not only because we think it's the right thing to do to give you this opportunity, but also because it's we're trying to ensure that we have researchers in the future that we can recruit. So we figure it's a very clever tactical strategy, I think. So we figure that by getting to people like you when you're young and impressionable, and you feel that you owe us something, then at the end of the day, we'll be able to recruit you easier in 5 or 10 years. So I hope you have a wonderful time here. I think it's great that Damian has put together such a good program, also with the help of the facilitators and your teachers who are here to show that they've done, I think, really yeoman's service, and the program looks fantastic. So have a wonderful time, and enjoy.
So we'll just go through a couple of details, game, back schedule, so forth, and then we'll get into physics. So this will take about 10, 15 minutes. Important, so washrooms, which are bathrooms, toilets, whatever you want to call them, WCs. So the washrooms, they're actually two male and female located just on the other side. So if you go out that building, then just around the corner and turn right. So basically on the other side of the wall. So if you look, see what Mark is pointing.
Focus floor.
So around the corner. Yeah. And also some more of their pool. Actually on this floor, if you go down about 10, 15 meters on the left, there are also male and female washrooms or toilets there. So that's where that is. So you're all actually very well behaved, very quiet, excellent when you are coming up here. While please talk about physics as much as you like, just before we could just be seeing this is a place, there's an active research institute, so a lot of scientific thinking. Just be a little bit aware of that. So talk about physics, just don't yell about physics to people. So we have scientists here thinking the very deep thoughts, and we don't want to disrupt or interrupt them. So just please be aware of that. So does everyone have pen and paper? Is anyone not that does not have pen and paper? So okay. So I'll assume that's a yes. So it's your responsibility to bring your own pen and your own paper every day. So you may have some spares, and if you ask Michael or Mark or me or something very nice, we may give you some. You're missing some pen. Okay, three people.
I asked.
Okay, do we have any more?
There's cats down there.
Okay. Mark.
Anyone want to share around you? Share around with you guys?
Point out something. These pads are punched. Do you have a punch?
Share around you guys? You guys can
to the teacher.
Are we doing the break?
This will not fund the whole pad at once. So maybe the sheets that you've written on, those are the ones you hold punch and put in the binder. Got it? Okay, so we'll make it available for break.
Okay. So tomorrow we will have spares, but please bring back the pen and the paper, unwritten paper. Okay. So just looking at the schedule, so you'll have the schedule for the first week. Meal breaks. So we have a little break and we have some snacks and some water out there, and that will be happening at 20 past 10. So that's a little 15-minute thing. Goes from about 10:20 to 10:35. So if we can have everyone back here at 10:35, don't go wandering off too far, back to Rev or anything like that. The quicker we have everyone back, the more we can get through. So every day we have a break. And that will actually be just out there, so in our restaurant, our bistro. So, also lunch. So we do feed you, and that's just also out there in our restaurant, the Black Hole Bistro. And you see what that's like. And so that's from 12 to 1, so that'll be a buffet lunch. And so I understand there are some people who have various dietary restrictions, like they might be vegetarian, or they only eat chocolate, or... you could just maybe leave me at lunch and a pizza.
Yeah, okay.
So, have you... Oh, actually? So a lot of you, I should mention, so you met Mark, you met Michael, you met Sonia. We should actually introduce you to a few other people now. So a lot of you got emails from Nafisa Lada. And so this is... Also, actually, in a minute, I'll actually introduce you to teachers. If they didn't introduce the teachers, I should probably do that. So I'll do that in a minute. So my apologies for not having done that before. So the break, so from lunch from 4 to 1 out there, so some of our researchers from the Institute are out there too having lunch, and they're very friendly, they're very nice, I know a lot of them, so feel free to go up to them, ask some questions about physics and so forth, because really we want this week and a half that you're here, the next 11 days, it's really about you, and we want you to have as much of a really fantastic, good experience as physics, and don't, I encourage you to ask questions. They want you to. I mean, physics is what they do, and I don't know. I'm not sure. You may not get it. You probably don't go to theoretical physics because you So if you don't ask now, you may not get another chance. So they're all very welcoming, and they know you're here, and they know why you're here. They know you're very interested in physics, and they're very excited that you're here, as we all are. So what I'll do actually now, so we have four teachers here from overseas, and so I'll just introduce them to you now. So have you met everyone or no? So maybe just in case, could you come down the front, please? Sorry to put you on the spot, but... So in addition, we have four teachers that are very, very dedicated physics teachers and that have come here to help you out, to learn more about physics themselves so that they can go back and teach their students. So so this is Barbara,
yes.
She's come all the way from Poland. Anna Maria from Brazil, from Sao Paulo. And we have Edna, come from Singapore, and Terence, also from Singapore. So please. So you get to know them over the next week, and they'll be helping you out and talking to you. So please make them feel welcome. So thank you. Okay. So what I'm going to do now, so I'll just briefly run through the program. So essentially what we're going to do, so you see the kind of the little, I'm not sure what, it's kind of a light pink color, I guess. So a salmon pink color. So if you look at that, so, you know, the language of physics is mathematics. So what we're going to do really over the next 1.5 days is going to give you a little primer, kind of crash course in some of the tools that you'll need. And these are really, really important. If you get a better sense of these will make basically every single lecture and every single physics talk that you hear just a lot easier, and you'll actually understand it deeper, because we'll actually be using mathematics, not too heavy, but mathematics over basically the course of the entire program. So you got, I think you were given, was it last night, the math primer, which was kind of long and big and scary and stuff. So what I'll say is just in case anyone's concerned about that, I mean, if you found that too easy, then great, fantastic. That's no problem whatsoever. But if you found some of the symbols a bit new or strange, just take a deep breath and don't worry. We're not expecting that you know all of that, and you won't be assuming that. And that was just to kind of give you some sort of a familiarity with what it was. And what we'll be doing, Sonia and I and Michael, will actually be taking you through parts of the math in that over the next day and a half. So that was really just to give you a first exposure to that. So that's the best part. So don't, and also this week and next week, don't worry if you understand everything. I don't understand everything. So no one understands everything in physics, and that's what you learn. No one, I mean, it's so complicated, so special, and nobody understands everything. So join the club. But having said that, you should understand something. So you can kind of see we'll be going through, so Sonia in a minute about, we'll be going through some calculus and differentiation. And then we move on to some, it's actually got matrices there, but we'll look at sort of complex numbers, so I will walk you through that this afternoon, and some matrices. And so the day finishes, you can see, around about 5:15. And then up until about lunch tomorrow, we have mathematics. And then we might actually swap that around a little bit. And so what we'll be doing is we'll actually be getting you to do a lot of problems. We'll be teaching you and lecturing you. But I think most people you only really learn when you actually do get some pen and paper out and actually do some problems. So we'll give you a lot of problems. So then physics start. And what we're going to actually be doing is taking an introduction to quantum mechanics. And it's kind of an interesting area. I mean, quantum mechanics is the most successful theory in the history of science. It's been around for 80 years, 85 years. I mean, thousands of experiments have been done. Every single accepted experiment has agreed with quantum mechanics. It predicts certain properties, such as the magnetic moment of the electron, down to one part in 10 billion. So it's incredibly accurate, incredibly successful. And we're going to actually take you through that. We're actually going through a really good mathematics, but not just sort of a vague, hand-waving popular description. So we're going to be doing that. So you basically see that's all in red. And that really ties in well for the first keynote presentation. So I'll be giving all the lectures in red, presentations in red. And so I said we have some of our researchers. And so we have Raymond Lafond. And we're talking about harnessing the quantum world. And what that is, that's when you're talking about quantum computers. And really, which is part of quantum technology. And they actually have a prototype quantum computer at the University of Waterloo that you'll see on Monday next week. And this is a very, very exciting area. Really, where just as computers in the 1940s were built, and just you think of how much computers have changed the way we think, society, life, business, everything. So basically, it's going to be a whole new different breed or species of computer that for certain things will just leave even the most powerful supercomputer we have today just for them. And so Raymond is going to talk about that and give you more of an idea. And one interesting thing about Raymond is he actually completely changed field. So he actually used to do cosmology, and he has a PhD in physics. And here's Stephen Hawking, the physicist in wheelchair. Grimaud actually did his PhD with Stephen Hawking, so he knows him very, very, very well. So he studied under him for some 3-4 years at Cambridge University. So he'll be talking to you on Wednesday morning. So another keynote presentation. So on Thursday we have Lee Smolin, and talked about him before. One of our researchers, so new presentation, and that will be on, that's on space and time, the nature of space and time. So I mentioned the mentoring sessions. You'll be split up into groups of about 8 students, and what you do is you'll actually get being teamed up with one of our scientists at the Research Institute, and they'll take you through some sort of mini problem, and you'll actually be scientists. And you'll get kind of an idea of what it's like to do research in the open-end nature. And you'll get to know them as people. And so we'll basically be having all of the researchers here, mentors here at 1:30. They'll come in, they'll explain who they are and what their project is. And then as much as possible, you'll vote for which project you'd like to go in. And as much as we can, we'll try and give everyone their number one preference. Now, that won't be possible, most probably. Just because the way things work out and there are more people when you go in one group and more in another and so forth. But no matter which mentor you get, no matter which group you get, they're all excellent scientists, they're all excellent teachers, and they're doing physics today, current cutting-edge physics. So you really can't lose there. So that will be 1:30, and then 2 p.m. we'll actually be splitting up into groups going throughout the building, and we'll be getting into the physics. So. Okay. Friday. So Friday is some more quantum physics. And then, so some of you heard, said last night you'd heard of dark, hands up who's heard of dark matter and dark energy. Okay, hands up who has some dark matter and dark energy at home. Okay, no, just a silly question. Okay. So we have Cliff Burgess, who's one of our researchers, actually gives a lot of these problems that he'll be talking about. So dark matter and dark energy make up together 96% of the universe, and we really have very little idea how what they are. And it's only very recently found out about them through a number of astronomical observations, looking through telescopes and other distant space probes. And Cliff will actually take you through the evidence of why we believe there's all this stuff out there in the universe, even though we can't actually directly see it, which is that's really, really interesting talk. So kind of what makes up 96% of the universe is kind of an important topic. Okay. And then very late, lastly, before we finish, so we're going back to quantum teleportation. So teleportation, you may think, you know, beam me up, Scotty, just a science fiction thing. But it is real. And so science has done again kind of prototype experiments, and they've teleported individual photons, laser beams, beams of light, like you get out of a laser pointer, and also atoms from one place to another. And we have Carlos Mocon, one of our researchers, and he's going to be basically, he's not just going to talk to you about it. He will talk about the experiments, but you're actually going through all of the mathematics, really deeply understand it, the way a professional physicist understands it. And I think that's a pretty good end for the week. So we can't guarantee you'll actually be able to teleport, because it needs, maybe only 10, 15 laboratories around the world to do that. A lot of complicated equipment, very expensive. You've got the second week. Okay, great. So the second week. Yep? We're going to say, because you believe. So quantum physics is one of the two twin pillars of modern physics, the physics of the very small. So in some sense, special relativity, Einstein's theory of special relativity, is the physics of the very fast, and it ties in with his theory of general relativity, the physics of the very large. And so we'll talk about that on Monday. So Monday afternoon, you go to the Institute for Quantum Computing, and you'll actually see a quantum computer, you'll see quantum secret codes setups, and you see that all of this stuff, even though we're just theoretical, all of that stuff is real. Physics is study of the real world. And we don't just study these theories. I mean, we love the mathematics, it's fun and stuff. But ultimately, one of the reasons why we study them, why we come up with these theories, is we believe, as far as we know, even though we don't have final theories, that our best guess of the way the real physical world is out there is one. So you'll actually be seeing those. Then, has anyone heard of an equation E equals MC? Great, you guys are brilliant. Okay, so, you know, you can actually derive that, not just accept it and know what it is, but actually derive that from simple principles that you would all know. And so one of our researchers, Sean Group, is actually going to take you through derivation. Basically, you can do it an hour, 15 minutes of E equals MC squared, that equation. So you can go home, you can go to parties, you can go out to baseball games, and explain it to everyone else. Is that just me that does that? And then, so you've met Michael Burns. And so he, the green bits, so he's going to be talking about black holes. So he's an expert in them, knows a lot about them, and he's really going to have some amazing computer animations and so forth, really give you an idea about black holes, the mathematics of them, and what happens in the vicinity of a black hole. And why it's probably a bad idea to go inside. Don't recommend. Right. So I think, I don't know if Charlene and Jamie mentioned that as one of the rules, but that's don't go inside. Okay. Tuesday afternoon, the mentoring session. Keynote presentation. I don't know if you don't have that, but we actually are able to get one more keynote presentation in. And that's Fotini Makupulu Kalamara. And Fotini, she is one of our main researchers here, and she's going to be talking about space and time. And her research actually in quantum gravity, I talked about quantum gravity combining quantum physics and general relativity, and she works in that area. She's going to be talking about that. So afterwards we have the group presentations, I think you see there. So you will have 6 hours, be with your mentor, you will learn about problems, some particular problem. And then what we will have is then, you want to tell everyone else about what you learned and the physics you came across. So you will actually be giving little short oral presentations, so talks, for about 10 minutes. And so in your groups of 8, explaining what you did, because communication is an essential part of physics. One thing you probably don't realize, but actually you should go around and have a look around at all the scientists you'll see this week. And what you'll find is you'll see a lot of scientists talking to each other, a lot of scientists socializing, a lot of scientists in groups. And we call them researcher lounges. You'll see kind of the comfy couch for this blackboard. And often you see groups of 3 or 4 researchers working around. And the thing is, all research today in physics is done in teams. It's collectively, it's social, 3 or 4 physicists. And if you go into the particle accelerator experiments, there are hundreds of people involved. They're really basically pretty much, I think the image of physicists most people have is of someone like Einstein, someone locked away in a room, working by themselves, late at night, in isolation. That really doesn't happen anymore. It's just too hard, too complicated for any one single person. So you do it in teams. And so 2 minds, 3 minds are better than 1. So I encourage you to look out and look for researchers doing that and actually see that. But as part of that, because communicating, explaining the physics to do, because it's important for you to have it up in your head, but it's maybe just as important for you to be able to explain it and communicate it and tell it to other people. It's a lot more fun. Anyway, so you're going to get some practice at that on Wednesday. And then we'll finish up with some computer simulations that actually thousands of hours have been done in putting these together. And they show you actually what you would see if you could travel almost at the speed of light. And the world is just completely bizarre. Absolutely. It looks like some weird, strange, bizarre dream. So we're going to be looking at that. And then that brings us to the end of the program. So before I begin, what we'll do is I'll turn the lights down. And I'm going to show you a little bit here. So you're at Perimeter Institute of Theoretical Physics. You'll get to know a lot more about it. So we have a little video that tells you more about it, where you are, where you'll be for the next week and a half. So I think I'll just let it speak for itself. So, and then we'll get into the calculus stuff, please. So,
is Chris.
In my research, I'm asking the question, why?
In getting from point A to point B here,
I don't understand what quantum theory is telling
us. It's infinity and all its dual points.
It's a philosophical frame, reach,
I was strolling on the moon one day in a very early month of December, May.
When humans casually skipped along the lunar surface, you'd think we knew it all. What's around us and how everything works. Even the moon samples turned out to be not much different than rocks here on Earth, composed of elements on the periodic table. Remember the periodic table from science class? All those symbols representing all the elements around us. Metals, carbons, gases, and more. Well, the complete periodic table describes just 4% of the known universe. That leaves so much more we don't know about matter, energy, and perhaps new dimensions twisting and turning inside out.
But now as we move along, they converge.
Even today, there are forces of nature we don't fully understand at a fundamental level. Consider light. Why can't anything in the universe travel faster than the speed of a wave or particles of light? And what is gravity, and how does it really work? These are questions for bright minds known as theoretical physicists, scientists who contemplate the mysterious forces of nature and advance our understanding. Galileo did, and discovered that everything falls to Earth with the same acceleration. Isaac Newton built on that and determined there is a universal force of attraction among bodies throughout the entire cosmos. And Albert Einstein, one of our most celebrated thinkers, explained that gravity is not a force at all, but a warping in the geometry of space and time. Extending theories like this can be transformative. When Maxwell discovered a unified theory of electricity and magnetism, a new understanding emerged. Marconi applied that understanding to send the first wireless message between continents, launching the communications age and revolutionizing our lives with radio, television, cell phones, and the internet.
How should we understand what quantum theory is telling us about the world?
Now human beings are asking even deeper questions, like, what's inside a black hole? Are the atoms we're made of really entangled with other matter across the universe? Helping propel the search for answers is Mike Lazaridis, the founder and co-CEO of Research in Motion. Along with dynamic partners in the public and private sectors, he is securing the future of foundational research because understanding drives innovation. Crafting the vision and turning it into reality is Dr. Howard Burton, Executive Director of Perimeter Institute. His new approach to scientific research and educational outreach brought researchers to Perimeter's first home, an old post office in the heart of Waterloo, Ontario, Canada. A temporary home with the freedom to collaborate in a lively atmosphere.
They must be very smart about harmonic analysis.
Working together, or in complete solitude, scientists take their minds to strange new places. Like the ultra-microscopic world of atoms, where a single particle appears to be in two places at the same time, opening an infinitesimally tiny world of quantum ideas. And deeper still, 20 powers of 10 smaller than the nucleus, to quite possibly the very essence of everything. Streams or loops of electric flux, likely in strange dimensions, and perhaps vibrating in some kind of harmony with each other. And with all of space, time, and matter across the entire universe. Understanding everything, from the incredibly small to the infinite cosmos, is the bold mission of Perimeter Institute. Back on Earth, Along the shore of Silver Lake is the new home of Perimeter Institute, forged from steel, cement, and glass. A landmark, to be sure, but more importantly, an ideal research environment for a growing cluster of international scientists who contemplate, calculate, contribute new ideas, and share their wisdom with others.
What Einstein told us quantitatively, because that is...
Perimeter's outreach activities reach young minds across the country, while other students and even teachers travel to Waterloo from around the world to take part in special science camps, learn cutting-edge theory from the experts, follow ideas through to experiment, and leave inspired. For the general public, themed events are specifically tailored for all age groups. Exhibits, experiments, and programming share the transformative value of research and the joy of discovery. Activities include popular monthly lectures where people gather to learn from Perimeter scientists and special guests. Bizarre and abstract ideas are explained, personal stories shared, and questions answered.
Every elementary part of that carries with it bits of information.
The talks reach even wider audiences on television and through the Institute's growing website. All this from an award-winning center of inquiry dedicated to scientific research and educational outreach. A community of scholars investigating the world around us, adding to our collective understanding, sharing their insights with others, and building upon humanity's foundation of knowledge for generations to come. Perimeter Institute for Theoretical Physics, a new window on the mysteries of nature.
So what we're going to do now is get on to some math, and we have a little review of calculus, and so we're going to talk more about that, but probably the one mathematical tool you really want to, if you're interested in physics, and you really want to learn and help you basically no matter what era, across every era, I would say that will be calculus. So it's very, very important, and Sonia's going to be going through that over the next couple of hours, so I will hand it over to you as soon as I... camera. Come on. So, take it away. So, break about some parts.
Okay.
Please.
Can everyone hear me? You on the mic at all? Mm-hmm. Can you guys hear me? All the way through the back?
Yep.
Can you hear me on the microphones or because I'm talking loud?
Because
I'm talking loud.
Put on your collar. So.
My collar? Can you guys hear me better now?
Yes.
Sure?
That's good.
About that. Anyone? A little? Can you turn the volume on it?
Yeah, I think that the volume's... Yeah, we can solve complex problems if we can't do the
microphone.
So the sound is audio control. Okay. Program sound. How's that?
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
I talk like this?
Okay.
Okay, so who here has heard of calculus before?
Just,
whew, okay, got an advanced room. All right. What about if I threw any derivative at you? any derivative at all. Who thinks they can solve it? Excellent. Who thinks they can solve one, like if I just saw a really simple derivative, who thinks they can solve it? Good stuff. Who here thinks they can't solve any derivatives at all? Just put your hands up high, be proud of it. Come on. Awesome, that's good too. Of those people who think they can't solve any derivatives, who thinks they know nothing about calculus? You're actually right. Have you all heard of slope before?
Yes.
Yeah? Well, that's where we start from calculus. That's what it all starts from. So what is calculus? If you've read the math primer, you should be able to know this one.
Rates of change.
Rates of change, absolutely. It's the study of rates of change. Now, can anyone see why this would be important in physics? Anyone at all? Anyone? I'm looking for an actual answer. What do you think?
Instantaneous
rate of change becomes really important in physics. Any kind of rate of change becomes important in physics. We want to look at how things change in time or in space. It is an idea that permeates every single theory we have, more or less. And if you've heard of a theory, chances are we've got this in it, right? So let's get on with it then. So who knows the formula for slope? What do you think? Sure. What's the other wording everyone loves to use? Rise over run, right? So this is like everyone's mantra in grade 9. Something going, okay, rise over run. Slope is rise over run. Okay, so this is a really important idea because we're looking at how fast a line changes. Okay, so we're getting that rates of change idea. Do the graph like this. Line like this. This is all really familiar to everyone. An x-axis, y-axis, right? So we've got a general slope. And everyone knows the general formula for a line, y equals mx plus b. We've all seen this before. So we have a slope of m here. We've got your y-intercept, which is b. That's all familiar. Good stuff. I just want to see where everyone's at so we can keep moving. So for example, if I gave you, say I said the equation of this line was this. Who could tell me the slope? 3, perfect. See, we're brilliant, we're doing this fine. Just, okay, so as you mentioned before, another way of writing the slope formula, we've got rise over run, right? Or we can also look at it in terms of, right? This isn't strange to anyone? No. So we've got this other way of looking at it. So let's say I gave you a curve, because this is a straight line, right? Oh, this is too low, isn't it? I'm writing big so you can see everything. Well, I'm never getting that back in my life. Nice big graphs here. So arbitrary curve in space, right? Put a line through it. We call this a secant line, okay? It touches the curve at 2 points. So that's x2 and that's x1. So we can find to say the slope of the secant line, okay? That secant line is also known as the average rate of change, okay? Because it's not the rate of change at a specific point. We've got it over a certain area of the line. Does that make sense to everyone?
Yes.
Okay, we're good. Okay, so say I gave you, say I gave you another function. I said the function is equal to say t squared. We've all seen t squared before, right? Okay. Say I wanted the average rate of change between, that's a t1, 3, t2, 5. Anyone? So what we'll do is we'll do the rise over run idea.
Eight.
So we'd have
eight.
Is everyone in agreement on that? Okay, let's just walk through it then. We're going to have the slope. We're going to use m for slope, secant. Okay, so slope of the secant F at 5. I just want to make sure everyone's seen this notation. So we have F at 5, which would be Y2. And we have F at T1 here. So we square them. We're good with that. And then we get 16 over 2, which is 8. Is that okay with everyone?
Mm-hmm.
You really sure? Because here's your first quiz. You think I'm kidding. Can everyone see that all the way from the back, or is it too small? Good. Okay, so pull out a piece of paper. You got 10 minutes. Let's give these a shot. Just work on your own. Work with people around you. Should be all nice whole numbers, so don't worry if you don't have a calculator. Nothing too big. Everyone's quiet.
As you're looking through, check your answers with your your friends, your people sitting beside you.
Sorry.
Anyone be here? Anybody else? Anyone? We're all happy? We're all got school? Teachers want one? There we go. All right.
Is everyone happy? Everyone's tested out their work?
They work?
Yeah. Everyone?
Yes.
Okay, one thing that seems to be causing a fair bit of confusion around the room is the notation f at something. Now, this is a notation that we're definitely going to use a lot of, so I'm just going to go through it for those of you that are a little bit confused by it. So I have a function. Someone give me a function.
2x plus 4.
2x plus 4. Okay. So when dealing with a function, let's stick a square under. Just for fun. So, say I wanted to evaluate f at 2. I like the number 2. Okay? Who wants to tell me how to do this? You're in front. How would you do it? How do you evaluate it?
I take 2 instead of x.
Exactly. Exactly. So this notation is just a way of saying we've got this function, and this is the variable in it. So this is the thing that we're going to put. It's a letter for now, but we're going to put numbers in. Okay? And so what we do is this. So I just replace the x with a 2, and we square it. Is that okay with everyone? Does that clarify everything? A little bit? Not at all? Okay. So what we're doing with the slope, so we have the slope of the secant. You're going to have f of x2 minus f of x1, okay? So those are the values you input into the function, obviously divided by x2 minus x1. Is that good? Awesome. So are we ready to take up those questions, more or less? Sure. So who wants to give me the answer for question 1?
42?
Exactly. Now, does everyone see how we got that, or do we want to go through it? If no one speaks up, I'm just not going to go through it. Okay. Next question. What was the answer you guys got?
6.
6, sure. And the last question? -4. Exactly. So everyone got those answers down? Okay. If you're having problems with it still, come see me on a break and we'll talk about it. So who knows what we were going to have? Who's familiar with the concept of velocity? Who knows the general formula for it? I hear rumblings. What's that?
V equals d over t.
V equals d over t. Okay, that's what was said to me. What does that mean?
Velocity equals distance divided by time.
Distance by time. Now, what time? Which distance? Change in distance. There we go. So we're going to change and change. Now, you have something different?
Oh, I'm sorry. It is changing and displacement.
Changing displacement, yeah. Distance, displacement are similar words. Okay. So you say displacement is the difference?
No, we have distance is magnitude only, and displacement has direction.
Yes. Yeah, that's another one of the other common ones.
So it's not that weird.
That's still up for debate, though.
You can't see that,
okay.
You can raise a chance to put that up maybe the screen or...
Sure.
Or you can just write one.
I'm going to write it twice?
Yeah.
Do you want me to try and write it further on the board? I can come over here. I'll come over here and write some stuff for a while. It's okay. I should grab my notes though. Sure. Yeah, if anyone's having trouble seeing anything, just let me know. So what we were looking at then is z equaling the change in distance or the displacement, depending on how you look at it. We're going to look at things in terms of scalars, which would be without direction, just for now. Just because it just doesn't really matter for what we're doing. So to change in distance over change in time. Now, does this look familiar to anything we were just doing that was mathematical? What would it look familiar to? Change. Yeah, change in whatever change of x. But do we remember what that was? That was an average rate of change, right?
Yeah.
So what if we want a velocity right at a point, or speed right at a point? We don't want it over a section of time, but we want it at a little point. What's one way you could do this?
Use the tangent line.
Tangent line, sure. So does everyone know what a tangent line is? Yes. I'm going to draw it up anyway. Just in case some people don't want to say it. So this is what we had for a secant. Right? So say we want the we want a tangent. Oh, this is not a very good drawing now, is it? I'm going to do an easier curve. So we have a curve like this, okay? So we have a secant coming through here, okay? And say we want the velocity right at this point. So this will be t, no matter how straight my axes are. And this will be t, yeah, okay? So this is going to give us, if we do this, we're going to get an average, right? So we'll get an average velocity over this period of time. So what we do, what if we bring another secant line like this? It's a shorter period of time. And it looks like it's getting a little bit closer to just hitting that one point, which would be like this. Okay? So I wish I had a different colored chalk, but we've got one line here, and that's what we call a tangent line. It only hits the curve at one point. I realize it's very difficult to see in all the white chalk. But does that concept make sense to everyone? So we have a tangent line that hits only at one point. So if we get these secants with a smaller and smaller delta t, it will become the tangent line when these two points that it's touching the curve at come so close together that they're actually become the same point. Okay, great. So we're going to put this into our equation, right? So we've got some change in distance, right? Okay, so we'll say there's a change of distance there. We'll say it's distance t, because I'm not very creative. Okay? And we've got a delta t of 0. What's wrong with this picture?
Divided by 0.
Things go boom when you do that, so we don't want to do that. So what are we going to do? Well, this is where calculus starts to come in. We're going to do, sorry, what's that? Limits. Limits, yeah. So who here has heard of the concept of a limit? General idea? Good. So what we're going to do is let delta t get smaller and smaller and smaller, but we're not going to let it equal 0, because we can't divide by 0. So we get a better and better estimate as we let that happen. And once we take it to the limit, we have this whole structure for evaluating limits. So what we write, is this. Okay? So that way we're not actually evaluating at 0. We're just letting t get close to 0. So it will hit 0 at infinity. So if you've ever been to infinity, you know it's pretty hard to get there. Okay, but we're trying to evaluate this. So I'm going to do it in a general mathematical form. I'm going to switch out of the physics language and back into a math language, just so that we can get kind of these mathy concepts. So I'm going to call this mt, so slope of the tangent. Is that okay with everyone? And I'm going to say this. Let's change. That will be delta t. Okay, so we have f at t2 minus f at t1 over delta t. So we're letting delta t go to 0. Great. Sounds okay. But this is a little difficult to evaluate, right? We've got these t1s, t2s, but they're so close together, they're almost the same point, and we want this little tiny, tiny delta t. So what we do is we just rewrite this slightly. See the way I let the secant all come to one point rather than bringing in two points? To a point in the middle? So that's what we're going to change this to read like. So we still let delta t go to 0. And we're just going to take a general t now. Okay? We're just going to add a little bit of t to it. So we have t plus a little. Is that okay? And then we just subtract off f of t. Does everyone see how we got from here to here? Yes, good. I'm running out of chalk. Okay. So, for anyone who has seen calculus before, you better recognize this. Anyone, want to tell me what that is? It is a definition of?
Derivative.
Great. So, what we write, instead of calling it m at t, which would be the slope of the tangent, we have a certain notation for derivatives. And the notation that I like is Leibniz's notation. So that will be df at t dt. Okay? So we sort of just replace, like the delta notation, when we had delta f delta t, right? We've seen the slope formula. We had delta y, delta t. We sort of just let the deltas become d's. So they're like really, really small deltas. Does that kind of make sense? We call them infinitesimals, which is just a fancy word for really, really small. Now this is not a fraction. I know it looks like one. It is not a fraction. Please do not cancel out the d's. You laugh, but I've seen people do it. We will sometimes sort of fudge it and treat it like a fraction. But we always keep these together, okay? Because they mean just really small amounts of that, okay? And so what is this derivative? We're talking about rates of change, and what is it? Talking about slope of tangent. What is it in terms of rates of change? Instantaneous rate of change. And so this becomes very, very important. Does that make sense to everyone? Yeah. Okay, now, let's just find some derivatives then. Let's see what it is. The other feature I wanted to mention about this, though, is that when we're finding slope of a line, we can find a general slope, right, for the whole entire line. But when we were finding the average, we had to find it between two specific points. We couldn't just kind of arbitrarily do it, because the average changes, right? This definition allows us to find it for a general t. Okay, so we do this, we get another formula, and that's another function. And that function, if we plug in a number, will give you the instantaneous at that point. Now this might sound very abstract, so we're going to just give it a shot. Does that make sense, everyone? Okay, so we're going to just start with some simple ones. Can you guys see if I start here? Okay. F of x equals x squared. Okay? So we're going to write this in Leibniz notation. Okay? And we want to try and find the derivative. So first step, write down the definition. Just, we write it down, right? We're all good with that. Yes? Okay. So what we're going to do now is plug in x plus delta x into that formula. Okay? So we just pick up all that junk and replace. So what we have is x plus delta x squared. Okay? Minus x squared, because that's just f of x squared. In the bottom, we just have delta x. Okay? So who wants to come up and solve from here on out? got a brave soul. It's all yours. What's your name?
Matt.
Matt, and you are from?
Romania.
Romania, awesome. Okay.
I don't really like this foundation, but I'll be we've got a limit of delta x beneath delta. This is delta.
Oh, just delta. Okay.
Delta x tends to zero of x squared plus 2x delta x plus delta, no, delta x squared minus x squared all over delta x.
Sorry, can everyone see that? Do you want me to write it at the same time over here?
Yeah.
Would be good?
Sure.
Sorry, guys.
Which equals a limit of delta x, which tends to zero of this we can cut out, because there's zero. And we'll just group the delta x's and leave. Delta x multiplied by parenthesis of 2x plus delta x over delta x, which equals, we can cut out the delta x again, and now we'll take the delta x and make it 0, equals 2x.
Exactly. So I'm going to show it on the side of the board for everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you for your help. That's what we're going to have here. So this is what he did. Is he spread out the polynomial. And that, I'm hoping, is okay with everyone. And then what we can do is these cancel. Because they subtract. Simple enough. And so what we can do is divide this through here. So we get 2x. Plus delta x. Okay? And like he said, then we let this go over to 0. So it goes all the way to 0. And we just get 2x. So everyone can see it from both sides of the room now. Is that good with everyone? Sorry?
Sorry, I'm frozen.
Are you making fun of my hand gestures? Okay, so everyone can see how that one works. So I think we're supposed to break down another break. Okay, so we're going to try a few more examples when we get back. We'll see what we can do about this screen. And have fun at break.
So delta x squared is like delta x, because it's delta x squared.